Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Alex Biu with me from the Office of Public Health. He will be making a presentation shortly.
Good afternoon, everybody. I want to
and
thank
certainly
you for
will take
here.
Your questions
I have
as
Dr.
well.
Alex Biu with me from the
Over the past several days, we have been combing through the data, as we routinely do, in order to determine where we are and where we go from here. As you all know, the current proclamation is set to expire on Friday. There is a bit of good news. The data shows that over the past several days, we are beginning to move in the right direction. That gives me hope and encouragement, and it should to everyone. But I do want to caution everybody that it's still too early to say that we have changed our trajectory in a way that is going to be sustained. And I will tell you that we will never change our trajectory in a way that's going to be sustained absent people doing what is required of them with respect to all the restrictions and mitigation measures. But what it indicates is that the current mitigation measures are working, especially when you consider that it was 3 weeks and a day ago that we instituted the mask mandate, closed bars, and reduced social gathering sizes. And then it's been about the last week or 8 or 9 days when we've really started seeing the numbers improve. And we've always told you that there's typically a 2 week lag time between a change in behavior and when that would show up, for good or for ill. So it did show up 2 weeks after we changed the order for good. But the numbers, quite frankly, while they're improved, the improvements have been relatively modest. But we are encouraged. You know, our earliest COVID warning sign is the number of people showing up at the ER with COVID-like symptoms. Those numbers are beginning to come down. The number of cases that we're reporting every day is beginning to come down also. Hospitalizations, at least at the state level, are beginning to reduce slightly, basically in plateau. And there's the few regions that are still seeing increased hospitalizations, but for the state as a whole, they're coming down, I think down about a little more than 100 over the last 7 days. Test positivity is also declining too, but that also carries a caveat because the positivity for the state exceeds 10%. And in the vast majority of regions across the state, it's well in excess of 10%. So we need for these modest improvements to continue and hopefully actually become more pronounced as we move forward so that we can move beyond where we are today in terms of our phase two restrictions. So we're going to remain in phase two with the current restrictions set to remain in place for another 21 days. I will sign the new order on Thursday. It will go into effect on Friday, August the 7th. I think you know that we have calls with the White House just about every single week with the White House Coronavirus Task Force led by the Vice President. Dr. Birx is always there to participate and so forth. Yesterday, they shared with us a report that had been prepared by the White House that showed what we already knew, and that the state was in a red condition, which is based on the cases and on positivity. And they therefore recommended that we continue the mask mandate, the bar closure, and reduced social gathering size, in addition to other recommendations that they had made. So we made early fragile gains, but in order for this to continue, as we all need it to, we need everyone's help. We see early signs that the mask mandate is working by our own data, and we know from recent studies and experiences in other states and countries that mask wearing, distancing, and bar closures absolutely work. We can see it for ourselves, and I think this is going to be more apparent to you in just a moment when you hear from Dr. Biu. And what we know is that if more people would comply with the mask mandate, practice social distancing, stay home when they're sick, limit their outings, we would actually see stronger gains, and we know that they would be lasting as well. And in fact, modeling suggests, and I think it's been proven out in Arizona, that we can get to a rate of transmission of less than one without having to go back to a shelter or stay-at-home order or go back to phase one. We can leave the economy open as it is right now, but it does require everybody doing their part. And that's a goal that we should all share. And moving to today's numbers, first of all, I want to report that there is a backlog from a relatively large lab that is reporting to us for the first time today, and that report accounts for nearly half of today's cases. So today the state is reporting 3,615 new cases. 1,741 of those are backlogged, and without the backlog, the new cases would total 1,873. And those 1,873 cases would come from more than 20,000 tests. That brings the total state count of cases, confirmed cases, to 124,462. If you want to see the breakdown of cases by both report date and positivity date, then there's now a graphic for distribution over time on LDH's dashboard. So you can go to the LDH website and take a closer look at that. Today, we are sadly reporting 27 new deaths, and that brings the total to 3,937 since the start of the pandemic. There are 1,487 individuals hospitalized today across Louisiana with COVID-19, which is a slight tick down from yesterday. And over the last 8 days or so is down by just over 100 patients. We are showing 240 of these patients are on ventilators. We obviously are taking a closer look at that because there's been an increase in the percentage of patients on ventilators, and we're going to be looking more deeply into that and seeing what we can do about that particular situation, if anything. Now, if we do the rough back of the envelope calculation, just based on confirmed positive cases out there from tests, right now there are about 50,000 Louisianans with COVID-19 across the entire state, in every parish, in every community. And we know that each of our 64 parishes has a high COVID incidence rate based on the CDC definition of more than 100 cases per 100,000 population over the last 2 weeks. We do have a few charts that we're going to show you that we've been looking at, and I want to invite Dr. Biu to come to the podium now to go through and explain them. If you've got questions for Dr. Biu, I would ask you to ask them of him while he's here, and then upon the conclusion of his remarks and questions, I will come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor. So as the Governor noted, we have been looking very closely at the data, as we always do, and at our gating metrics. I'm going to show you now a slide that's zoomed in specifically on what's been going on across the state since we've been in phase two. And then you'll see a new line that's been added that shows you when the mask mandate, bar closures, and gathering size limitations were changed. Again, to orient you, you've got COVID-like illness. That's the blue line with the color changes. Below that, you've got testing. That's the purple line showing you the volume of tests that we're doing, and the yellow bars below that showing you the percent positivity. You may be able to see a gray line going across percent positivity. That's that 10% mark that we're all watching so closely. And then if we move to the upper quadrant, you have what we call the epi curve, the red and green graphic there, which is showing you the new cases as they're added each day. And then finally, the blue line that turns orange is our hospitalizations across the state. And a couple of key points to make. In general, as the governor has said, we are seeing early signs of plateauing or decreases in key things like COVID-like illness. That's people with symptoms of COVID showing up to emergency departments. Cases, again, decreasing in the green lines that you see. And hospitalizations plateauing, that your orange path there, the last 14 days of hospitalizations showing that so far it's flattened out, whereas we had been on a rising trajectory. If we look at those trends in relation to when the mandates were put in place, you see there's a pretty good correlation between the drop in symptoms, cases continuing to come down, and hospitalizations flattening just about 2 weeks after the mask mandate. I'll note with the cases, because of reporting happening a little bit later, because of turnaround times increasing with our big national labs like Quest and LabCorp, we expect that there could still be some changes in how many of those bars turn red past the mask mandate. But I would fully expect that 2 weeks out from that time point, we will see that we are seeing a decrease in cases. What's a really key point to make about that is what the governor emphasized. That is very heartening. It's what we'd expected. That's why we made the recommendations to the governor to put these measures in place. That's why the governor took the action to put these measures in place. Most importantly, these impacts reflect that the vast majority of Louisianans understand the importance of those measures and have adhered to them and really taken them on board in order to help us turn around again. And so in order for that trend to continue, and for us to really see how far we can take that decrease, I'm just going to redouble my ask to everybody that you wear a mask when you're out in public, when you're certainly leaving your household or around people who are non-household members. Stay more than 6 feet away from people and avoid places where you feel that it's unsafe because people are crowding together, not wearing masks. And certainly avoid any venue that you shouldn't be at because it's in violation of our restrictions. So on the next slide, I do want to touch a little bit on another point the governor made, which was talking about the new cases that we're reporting today. We still have labs that we're working on trying to get their lab results reported to the state. We think that as data comes in, we want to incorporate it because we always want the most accurate case count that we have in the state up to the date that we report it. And so when we get a lab bringing in old lab results, we incorporate those in. But I know it's caused frustration, certainly for members of the media, maybe for people at home watching, to understand, well, what would have been the number today versus where are these tests actually from? And so our outstanding team in the Bureau of Health Informatics, led by Dr. Lee Mendoza with the help of Jay Bessie and Andrew Behrens, has created this visualization that shows you in these blue bars how many of the tests reported today were from what date. And so you can see that the vast majority were from within the last week. However, tests here because of this lab extend as far back as May 28th. What you'll see when you go to the dashboard is the next slide, and this will be updated on a daily basis. As we're updating our epi curve, as we normally do, you'll now see the contribution of the new cases reported that day as blue bars on top of the orange bars. So these blue tips will represent for you where the tests are added in. This is what we've explained in words before, but sometimes a picture is worth a thousand words, and here you can see what we mean when we say that lagged test results coming in has an impact on the epi curve. We don't just put them on the day they come in, we distribute them based on the date that the specimen was collected. And so you'll see that on our website going forward. So now I want to switch to just the look that we normally give you at our gating measures or metrics over time and the reason that we gave the recommendation to the governor that we did. The last time that we looked at metrics table form like this was back on June 22nd, and at the time we were already seeing indications of concerning trends across the state, with increases in symptoms of COVID, increasing cases almost everywhere, and that was already having an impact on hospitalization numbers rising in a variety of regions. Now if we move to what we saw in the most recent trends, and again, this is looking over the last 14 days, and this is looking at absolute changes across those times. So are we seeing a decrease across those 14 days? I say that because we've also noted a caveat at the bottom where there could be a more recent uptick, a more recent increase, but the overall trend is still decreasing. So we do want to note that that's a trend that can undulate, as you'll see in the images that we distribute after this press conference, but that by and large, when we say decreasing, we mean decreasing over 14 days. Increasing is increasing over 14 days, and plateau is flat over that time period, even if it was sort of up and down. If we look at symptoms, you see that by and large now we have decreasing symptoms statewide. Some regions where that's just starting to hit a plateau, and we hope that that plateau turns decreasing. And still some concerns in central Louisiana where we're seeing increasing symptoms despite the rest of the state really showing decreases. Again, would encourage everyone to wear masks, but certainly if you're in central Louisiana, would really take that on board. You can have a role in changing that red to green. Cases are decreasing, and you'll see that in the materials that we distribute after this. Again, part of that may reflect that we're having test results coming in later, so the daily new cases may be lower until we know actually how many results were from that day. But in general, I would say the trend does seem to hold across the state that we're starting to see cases decrease, what we would want and expect to see with the measures the governor's put in place. Importantly, hospitalizations are also showing decreases in many regions, especially critical regions like Region 4 and 5, where we've been concerned for some time about exceeding capacity. And in fact, hearing from physicians and leaders, healthcare leaders from those regions, we are hearing that they are starting to feel like there's not quite as much pressure. By no means are we out of the woods. They are still dealing with hospital capacity crunches, but we're not in the dire straits that we were looking at a few days ago. As a result, though, we're starting to see what we think is patients shifting to Region 2 and Region 1, large healthcare infrastructure, regional referral centers that are taking patients from these other regions. So decompressing the smaller rural regions that may be meeting their capacity. So we're seeing these regions have some increasing or plateauing hospitalization numbers. Again, if we keep driving cases down through the good work that you've already done, we should expect that over time, this hospitalization column will all be green. We are still seeing increases in Region 8 and Region 9, as well as in Region 6, where we're seeing the symptoms and the cases continuing to rise too. So there's still more work that needs to be done. And as a result of that, and the fact that, again, we estimate that there's at least 50,000 cases, active cases of COVID across the state that we know of, not counting the people who don't have symptoms or the people who have symptoms but just haven't been tested, we think it's important for us to keep these measures in place. We are not in a position where we think we can start to peel away restrictions because, again, these are the most number of cases of active COVID that we've had at the state in any one period of time. So this is a time for us to continue to double down, work hard, do our part by wearing masks to prevent the spread of COVID. And I believe that's all the slides that I had for you today. Happy to take questions. Sam.
The state announced it's part of a six-state pact for buying antigen tests. Can you talk about the timeline? I know it looked like each state wants to buy half a million tests, but it seems like manufacturing hasn't started yet. Can you talk about what timeline you might be looking at?
So yeah, what I'll say is that I think one of the things that's set Louisiana apart from the beginning, we've been very aggressive about trying to get access to timely testing results for the state. That's why in July we had 613,000 tests reported to us, essentially testing 13% per capita of the state. when states have been sort of talking about coming together to both regionally collaborate in the distribution of tests because we've been hitting these supply chain limitations, but also this opportunity that was raised by Maryland and other states to come together and think about our purchasing power as states to ensure that the citizens of Louisiana have access to timely tests. So we did sign on to that agreement. There's a lot to be learned about that agreement. Again, as you noted, the manufacturers there not quite yet pushing out the tests. Even the number of tests that Louisiana would be engaged on would matter as well, given our population in that group is much smaller than the other populations. So I think there's a lot of details for us to learn about and iron out over the coming weeks. But the basic point was Louisiana is ready to partner with other states, whether they be our regional partners or partners around the country, to ensure that Louisianans have access to timely test results. So it would be our intent that they would be. They would be under the same obligation to report. These are antigen tests, so they're direct tests of the virus, just in a similar way to the PCR test that most people are familiar with, which tests the genetic material of the virus. That is different from the antibody test, which tests your body's reaction to the virus. So these, if they came back, would tell us that somebody likely has the presence of the virus. And so they do need to be reported to us. We understand, and I think we've announced, and the federal government has announced, that this type of test is what HHS plans to distribute to nursing homes for their point of care. And there are point of care tests across the state that are already in use. The Abbott ID Now machine platform, the Cepheid platform, those are already required to be reported to us. Yes, please. Yeah, I mean, I think what we're learning about contact tracing in general as a state, as a country, is that it is its success is dependent on a bunch of factors, only some of which are in the direct control of the people doing the contact tracing. One is just the volume that we've been seeing. Luckily, we've been able to scale up the number of individuals that we have answering calls. We have over 700 people now calling people and making those contacts. But I'll say when you have days that have thousands of test results reported, it's really hard for us to get to everybody in a timely fashion. So that's one limitation, is just getting to folks. We also know labs aren't giving us enough data to contact people. So there's still a proportion of people, a little bit under a third, that we get the test result and we don't know how to contact those people because the lab's not telling us enough information about them. However, of those that we're able to reach, we're getting better at reaching them timely. What we're now finding that's concerning is nearly 70% or more are telling us that they don't have contacts that qualify. Again, we define contacts as being within 6 feet of someone for more than 15 minutes. Regardless of whether you're wearing a face mask or not, because we know that not everybody's use of a face mask is perfect, and what we really want to know is, were you within 6 feet of somebody for more than 15 minutes? What was the context and who is that individual? And we're not getting a lot of contacts from individuals. That may be, in some cases, just because, again, if I asked you, who were you near yesterday, you may forget of some of the contacts that you had. But when you see 70%, you worry that people aren't fully understanding and participating in contact tracing. So what we and other states are doing is really trying to learn what could be more effective. How do we engage with people to help them understand the value of contact tracing and help ensure that we're getting more valuable information back from them? We're also looking at applying new technologies. We're going to be developing an app, a contact tracing app. Other states have done this as well, that'll help us use information from your cell phone, if you allow it, that would help us understand if you did have somebody that you were in contact with, and help us identify those folks so that we can give them information.
If it's not working, why do we continue these? We got 700 people, we got all this money. Why continue?
So I wouldn't grant that it's not working. I would want it to be more effective. We do know, for instance, part of the way that we were able to identify that bars were a problem in this state and take actions that have likely saved people from infections and saved lives is from information we received through contact tracing. So I wouldn't say that it's failing. I'd say that I would want it to be much more effective. But again, only part of that is controllable by us. Part of that is not. And I think the volume of the virus, the amount of virus that we have circulating in the community makes contact tracing more challenging. But in the meantime, still reaching out to folks, because one of the big things we do through contact tracing is also connect people with resources, give them really valuable information that they need about how to protect themselves and their family members. That does have a value. That has a value to the individual who's reached. I think it's important for us to continue getting that information out there, making sure that people hear as many ways as possible. If you're a case, how to isolate, and if you're a contact, how to quarantine. We still hear people thinking they can test out of quarantine. The only way we can challenge that is by continuing to get good, useful information out to folks. People need masks, cleaning supplies, access to resources to be successfully staying in their homes. That's what we're doing through contact tracing. That's going to continue to build the skill set of those folks doing the contact tracing. And when we see cases come down to a more reasonable level where potentially intervening through contact tracing becomes even more impactful, my hope is that all this other work that we've been doing in the interim has a real value in making the system as effective as possible. And as I noted from the app, we continue to try to iterate. We now use SMS or text-based follow-up. We're trying to launch an app in the coming months that will help us even further. So we are in no ways giving up on contact tracing. Melinda. So again, I would just stress that this was a relatively recent compact, and there's a lot of details, in fact, even just talking with the manufacturers that need to begin. So a lot of those answers we just don't have right now. To your first question, though, how would we use those? It would be as if with any other test that we have, where we look at our testing priorities on the ground, which shift day to day. Where are their hotspots? Where is it appropriate to have point of care tests? Importantly, these particular point of care tests are appropriate for folks with a certain level of risk of COVID, but may not be appropriate for that person where we have a really critical need to answer the question because of their test dynamics. And what I guess I'm saying is that they may not be as sensitive in identifying COVID as some of our PCR tests, but what they do benefit is that they're much cheaper, they're much easier to deploy, and they give a much faster answer. So that may be appropriate for community tests, but maybe not hospital tests. So we don't have an answer yet for how we would deploy them. We don't even know yet from the manufacturers, because again, there's a need to then engage with them, how quickly they will be producing these, what volume they would see. All of that is going to have to be taken into consideration when we think about how they would be deployed within Louisiana. Yes? This specific test, or do you mean in general?
In general.
I mean, in general, it depends on the test, and that's not a very satisfactory answer. We know that PCR tests, those tests of the nucleic material, the genetic material, that's the vast majority of the kind of testing that's done, is a very reliable testing platform. The type of machine that it's going in, the length that it runs, depends on how reliable that test is. The ones you're getting in hospitals that are run on these big robots where we're doing lots of tests, those are really reliable tests. Some of the point of care tests may not find as many positives as they would in the other PCR test, but we don't have a lot of false positives in the PCR realm, and that's because we do very close quality control. With these antigen tests, we're still trying to learn more. We've heard from some states, Vermont and Maine, some concern about user handling. So again, if you're doing this in a lab where a lab technician is doing the test, we have a lot more confidence. When you put a point of care test into a clinic, you don't know how comfortable that person is with operating that test. And we have heard from some early adopters, they had some challenges with false positives. And that's why we're interested in talking with the manufacturers about what they're doing to ensure that that's less likely. So we think if there's anything, we're probably seeing more false negatives. But even then, it's a very, very small number. I'm going to go over here.
What's the status of the rapid test machines that were promised to nursing homes around the state? About how many of those do we have in
So to my knowledge, we haven't had any deployed in the state yet, but again, that's to my knowledge. These are going to be deployed directly to the nursing home, so often they would be the ones who know before us. We've been alerted that I believe there's at least 45 nursing homes that should be expecting machines, and my understanding is that CMS and HHS are prioritizing based on the number of cases that they're seeing in these nursing homes. Melinda. I mean, I'll say we looked at a lot of different ways that any venue could be made safer, but even in the context of bars, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I think bars are particularly challenging just because of, one, if you're slowly drinking, sipping a drink all night, your mask is mostly going to be off of your face. So already there, we have one of our main lines of defenses off the table. Same is true when you're in a restaurant, so what's different here? Well, here again, in a restaurant, you're usually not there for quite as long, and tables and the restrictions that we've put in on social distancing mean that you are less likely to be in close contact even though you have your mask on. That's why it's so important, and you see us taking actions to make sure that restaurant tables are spaced, because that's your best line of defense when you have your mask off when you're eating. It doesn't suddenly make it safe just because you have to take your mask off to eat, but being further apart is important. And the third sort of factor is really what's sort of entailed by going to a bar. It's usually you're going to socialize. You're going to be close to people. Often there could be loud music. That means you have to lean in to talk to people. All of those things mean that you'd have to be very, very vigilant to be able to stay 6 feet away from somebody, to be able to remember to put your mask back on when you're not drinking. And we know that the main purpose of going to a bar is drinking alcohol, which decreases your vigilance. And so those factors combined empirically have shown us over and over again, whether it's South Korea, United Kingdom, multiple states in the United States, Louisiana, that it's really hard to make that environment safe. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Alex. As I said before, the best way we can get through this and the best way that individuals out there can help is to follow the mitigation measures that we have in place. And I think that from the presentation that Dr. B. just had with our most recent data, in seeing where those trend lines changed after the mask mandate and the bar closures and so forth, you can see that these things do work. And with respect to the mask, by the way, it's not asking too much for people to wear a mask to protect others and just being a good neighbor. There are other ways that we can be good neighbors and help. If you're interested in participating in the clinical trial for therapeutics or vaccines, I encourage you to visit clinicaltrials.gov, and there you can find information about clinical trials that may be conducted in your area. We also need people to donate blood and plasma, especially if you have recovered from COVID-19 and have antibodies. Your plasma could help save the life of someone else. Right now, a convalescent blood plasma transfusion is one of three approved therapeutic treatments for seriously ill people in the hospital with COVID. And so we would ask that you consider doing that if you're recovered. Even if you haven't had COVID-19, we know that hospitals are still in need of blood donations. And in many cases, if you donate blood, you will also receive a free antibody test as part of that. So we'd encourage people to do that. As I think Sam asked a while ago, you all know that today Louisiana announced that we're one of six states, along with Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Ohio, and Virginia, participating in a major joint interstate compact with the Rockefeller Foundation to expand the use of rapid point-of-care antigen tests. So we signed on to a letter of intent yesterday. Obviously, the details are not yet final, and we're going to have to negotiate those as we go forward. But the interstate testing compact, which by the way is the first of its kind, will allow states to ramp up the use of rapid antigen testing to help detect outbreaks sooner with faster turnaround time and expand testing in schools, workplaces, nursing homes, and other settings as we need over time. Through this cooperative purchasing agreement, states will have a platform to purchase stockpiles of tests and associated supplies in a sustainable, cost-effective manner. And by banding together, these states will achieve the purchasing power necessary to reliably and predictably participate in the market. That's and do so in a way that is more cost-effective. We will signal to the private manufacturers that there is a significant demand that they can then scale up their production of these tests, knowing that they will have a market for them. Now, exactly how we will deploy these tests, we don't know yet, but I can tell you Dr. Bee was right. On the initial list, we have 45 point-of-care tests that are going to be going to 45 different nursing homes in Louisiana. I don't believe any have received them as of yet, but over time, the plan is for every nursing home to get one of these tests, and I don't know what that time horizon looks like. So when these tests that are available through this compact are available to us, we will look at the landscape as it is at that time and then decide how we need to employ these particular tests. We've done a significant amount of work to improve testing in Louisiana, and I want to thank the many people at the federal, state, and local level, public and private sector, who worked extremely hard to complete more than 613,000 tests in Louisiana for the month of July. That is more than three times the goal that we had. We had that minimum goal of no less than 200,000 tests per month, and we got over 600,000 tests. Thus far in August, we've already reported more than 107,000 tests, and one of the key differences between now and 3 months ago, we just are testing at a much, much higher level. Quite frankly, it's going to be difficult to sustain as you see shortages of reagent at the lab and so forth. But we're going to do everything we can in Louisiana to test as much as we can, because contrary to what some people believe, testing doesn't create a case. There's a case out there or not, but testing gives you an opportunity to know where the cases are. And when you get that test result back in time, especially, you have an opportunity to get that positive individual into isolation and then do the contact tracing necessary for close contacts to get them into quarantine and so forth. Critically important. So I want to thank everybody who has worked so hard to allow us to ramp up testing the way that we have. I'm also pleased to announce that President Trump last night extended Title 32, which allows for the continued use of the Louisiana National Guard in our COVID-19 response in a way that the federal government will be responsible for more than would typically be the case. We're grateful for Brigadier General Keith Waddell, who heads up the Louisiana Army National Guard, and all the soldiers and airmen who are helping on so many fronts. And I will just tell you from the very beginning, they've worked extremely hard and done so much good work. I can't imagine responding to this public health emergency without the Louisiana National Guard and all of those soldiers and airmen. They've tested 174,000 citizens at our medical testing sites. They've delivered 44.7 million items of PPE and packaged into 10 million pounds of food across the state. This extension of Title 32 will run through December 31st, and the federal government will pick up 75% of the cost of the use of the National Guard. I am also very grateful for the vast majority of Louisianans and business owners who are caring for their neighbors by wearing masks, staying home when sick, practicing social distancing, washing hands frequently. And this is something that we talk about sometimes, and I'm not sure people really are paying attention to it, and it continues to be a point of emphasis by the White House Coronavirus Task Force, especially Dr. Birx. We're encouraging people to limit their movement outside their homes by cutting down on the number of trips that they make. Whether it's to the grocery store, to the bank, or whatever. I mean, do those things that you need to do but do them less often, and don't take more people with you than absolutely need to go. And if we will do this without really inconveniencing people, we can just produce a much safer environment for everyone and cut down on the number of transmissions of the virus. I think we can do that, especially if you can reduce your trips outside of the house by 50%. And when you go to a restaurant, we'd encourage you to dine outside or take it home. There is no safer place than home. So we're starting to see some progress. We need to stay the course. And at this time, I will take some questions. Sam. Yeah. Well, first of all, I will tell you that the particular restaurant that you mentioned, in any restaurant or other retail establishment that is operating in a similar fashion, is being extremely reckless and irresponsible. There is no doubt they are contributing to the spread of the virus in a way that is just unacceptable. Action has been taken. I can tell you, we first tried to talk to the proprietor there and gain compliance. That wasn't fruitful. And then the permit was taken from that particular restaurant. And I will tell you, there will be additional actions going forward, and we're taking a look at those now. I would encourage all business owners to really understand that all of the work that was done by the legislature to provide immunity and reduce civil liability for private sector establishments, restaurants, other retail businesses, is not available if you don't follow CDC guidelines. And so it's self-defeating for the businesses who want to enjoy that immunity to engage in their business in a reckless manner, such as being done at the restaurant that you mentioned. In addition to being reckless, it's unlawful. And so we do encourage everybody out there to follow these mitigation measures that have been mandated in a way that is fully consistent with the authority that I have under the Constitution, and warranted, and in fact, it just absolutely necessary because of the situation that we have in Louisiana with COVID-19. We have had more cases per capita than any other state in the United States of America. You know, the White House Coronavirus Task Force continues to put a red label on Louisiana because we have such a high disease burden and because we have a high positivity. And of course, that task force is also recommending these measures. So for all of those reasons, you know, we would encourage, and by the way, it's not too late. It's never too late to do the right thing. That business owner and all others to operate their businesses in a way that's responsible and that will cut down the transmission. And if there was ever any doubt of the efficacy of these mandates, go back and look at those charts that you saw today. They make a real difference. Fewer people will get the disease, fewer people will go to the hospital, and fewer people will die. It is just that simple. And for those reasons, I feel confident that we will prevail in litigation that would have the effect of ending, whether it's the mask mandate or the bar closures, because they are necessary, as pointed out by the White House Coronavirus Task Force. They are making a positive, those closures and those mask mandates are making a positive difference. And we actually are relieving the stress on many of our hospitals already, not all of them. And so for those reasons, I feel confident, but we're obviously going to be prepared and go in. And look, I know this is not easy. I know that no owner of a business wants to be told to limit occupancy to 50%. I know that if you're a bar owner, you don't want to be told that you can't have on-premises consumption. I mean, that's what bars are about. But at the end of the day, for all the reasons that Dr. Biu went through, it is just not a safe venue when you have a pandemic of the nature that we have. And so these are hard decisions to make. But that is why we left open drive-throughs. We left open curbside pickup. If they've got video poker machines, they can have two of them on, so long as they're not contiguous, because that's not on-premises consumption. These are not decisions that were made lightly. But at the same time, you've got to strike the right balance and make sure that you're promoting the health and welfare of the people of the state of Louisiana. And for all of those reasons, we feel confident about the litigation. But obviously it's a very serious matter and we take it seriously. Yes, sir.
Governor, LSU athletic officials said fans can expect about 50,000 to be able to gather in Tiger Stadium in a matter of weeks. I guess that would seem like that would be up to you and your order. Is there a scenario within a matter of weeks where you see that 50,000 fans can safely gather?
Yeah, it's not time to go there yet. I can't sit here today and predict what that's going to look like. And I know that there are a lot of aspirational statements being made. Nobody's a bigger fan than I am. And we want football as soon as it's safe to do so. And we want some fans in the stands as well. Exactly what that's going to look like, we don't know, and it's just premature, and I don't want to speculate. But you can rest assured I'll have something to do with what that limit looks like.
But on that same subject, do you have a timeline for when you anticipate to sort of make that call? I mean, obviously you extended modified days through the end of the month. That's only a month away from football season. Mm-hmm. They have to let ticket holders know those kind of things. So what is your
Yeah, I don't yet have a personal timeline, but you can't know until you know, and you can't know until you have data. And so we obviously are going to have to get closer in time to know what's safe. Yeah, I can't tell you that today.
Should they be on the radio talking about 50,000?
You heard my answer. Yes, sir.
Obviously, over at Southern today, moving day, earlier this summer, with Memorial Day and July 4th being blamed, at least in part, for the surge in cases we saw, is there any concern that students moving back into dorms and back on campus could also,
Yeah. And look, the 4th of July may have contributed. It was Memorial Day more than the 4th of July, I think, based on the data that we have here. And around the country, not just in Louisiana. I think it was more Memorial Day, but I think the point remains the same regardless. We always worry about that, which is why we've worked so hard, working with Commissioner Kim Hunter Reed and all of higher education, the various system presidents and university presidents and chancellors of our community technical colleges, to have a safe environment by embracing all of the CDC guidelines, making sure that they're going to be masking, for example, and engaging in social distancing. And look, I know this is tough and so forth, but we're looking for excellent leadership out of students, out of staff and faculty and the presidents of these institutions in order to do this safely. I believe it can be done safely. We're going to continue to work to make sure that it is, in fact, going to be safe, and we're going to very closely monitor what's happening on our college campuses and at other schools as they open. But we believe that it can be done safely. And if you look at the degree to which students are going to be participating in class online or in a hybrid situation where they are sometimes going to be in the classroom and sometimes participating online. And when they're going to be in the classroom itself, the facility will be much larger than it would otherwise be, so that those students can spread out and so forth. you know, we have a tremendous plan. I think you're going to hear more this afternoon from Commissioner Kim Hunter-Reed and from some student leaders at Southern University as to what that planning looks like. But you asked me, I think, if I have concerns. I always have concerns. Today, that's just the nature of the pandemic that we should have concerns. But that means we should do things as safely as we possibly can, believe in the science, follow the data, and implement best practices. And then as we learn more about the disease or more about mitigation measures, you have to be willing to adjust and do things differently so that you can get an even better outcome. And we're committed to doing all of that. Look, I want to thank you all for continuing to cover this matter. It's obviously very serious, more serious here in Louisiana than in many places. You know, we were at the leading edge of the first surge, and we've been at the leading edge of the second surge, which is why we have the number we're number one in terms of the cases per capita in the country. We also have a lot of people out there who are working extremely hard across the spectrum so to keep our people safe, and that especially includes the medical community. And I want to thank all of our healthcare professionals for the work that they continue to do under very difficult circumstances, and they have performed just heroically and done a tremendous job again under very difficult circumstances. And one of the things that we can do to lessen that burden on them is the same thing that we should do to protect our neighbor, and that is wear your mask, social distance, wash your hands, stay home when you're sick, limit your movement, and those case numbers are going to go down. Positivity is going to go down. Hospitalizations will go down, and the number of people who die from COVID-19 will go down. And it's just the least that we can do. And we can do these things and not have to go backwards and impose more restrictions in terms of going back to phase one or to stay at home, and yet achieve a transmission rate that will have this disease on the decline. But it depends upon every single one of us doing our part. And I'm encouraging you, every one of you, to do that. And again, I would encourage you also to remember to pray, especially for those healthcare workers, for people who are sick, and for the families of those who have died from COVID-19. It's my expectation I will be back with you on Thursday here at 2:30 in the afternoon. Thank you all.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.